Hey, thanks for taking a listen to My Millennial Money. My name is Glenn James. I'm the host of this podcast, and I have some exciting news. The name of this podcast has changed to This Is Money. If you want to stay up to date with our most recent episodes, then search for This Is Money wherever you're listening to this podcast. Our focus stays the same. We want to help you live the life you want on your own terms. So subscribe to This Is Money for more episodes. But for now, enjoy the episode. How to create an investment strategy. We all want to be investors. We all want to build wealth. We all want to live on less than we earn so we can invest the rest and build a strong financial future. But how do you actually create an investment strategy that suits you? Well, today on the show, John from the My Millennial Property Podcast and I, we're going to talk about my seven steps when it comes to an investment strategy. And spoiler alert, these will apply whether you are keen to invest in property, whether you're keen to invest in shares, and it could be a good framework for any other goals in your life. But we can't do today's episode without the help of Sphere Home Loans. Now, if I wanted a new Honda, I don't go down to Toyota. I don't go to Nissan. I don't go to Ford. Where do I go? I go to Honda. The thing is, when it comes to lending and mortgages, the same applies with loans. You're only going to get a product of the bank or lender that you walk into. And they might not have products that suit your unique circumstances. I'm not talking about having a whopping income and a big deposit. No, I'm talking about you may be grinding away to save for your first home. You might be on a casual income. You might be on a contract. You might need some parental guarantees. You might need some other help. A mortgage broker will be able to match you with the most appropriate lender for your situation. So thank you to Sphere Home Loans for supporting the My Millennial Money podcast. But until we review our mortgages next, my name's Glenn James and this is My Millennial Money. So John, you've got my seven steps there. I'm thinking, before we get into these steps, do you want to maybe just talk about conceptually your experience when people come to you saying, I want to invest? Because as I said at the top, you'll cover these steps from a property point of view. I'll cover it from a share and equity point of view. And some of these will overlap, right? But what's your experience when it comes to people coming in saying, I want to invest and I need to build a strategy?
Good question. I think it's the word strategy is used a lot, isn't it? And it's understanding what does that actually mean? Is it the strategy for the particular asset that you're about to go and buy, or is it the strategy for your overall wealth for the next 20, 30, 100 years, right? And I think what you're going to allude to today without spoiling the show is that your seven steps or seven factors that we need to put into place is about the overall strategy for you and your individual situation, not so much the specific asset. So I think it's understanding what is the strategy for overall long-term wealth for you and your personality and your risk profile and your age and your and what you want your lifestyle to look like. But then personally, what's the strategy going to be this particular time and based on how much money I've got, the yield I need, the type, all these sort of things that come into play.
I don't know about you, but when I see things online and people talk about investing, everyone talks about, oh, what brokerage account should I use? What ETF should I invest in? Should I buy direct shares? My view is those things are tactics and the tactile things plug into the overall strategy. You need to step back and set your vision, your direction, and your strategy. Then you can kind of, like one of those flower sieves, or, you know, if you're prospecting for gold, you can kind of shake, develop the strategy. And then when you've kind of refined the strategy, what your goals are, what you want to do, then you can check out what type of investment product and platform will suit you. So one of the big things that I see online and when I had my practice and like you probably see is people go straight into solution mode. People go straight into tactics where we need to press stop and look at the strategy, because the tactics kind of take care of themselves once you nail the strategy, right?
I think so. And the property example is people jumping onto realestate.com before they know anything about their life, their personal situation, their risk profile. It's just straight on there. Let's search for property, because that's the exciting bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into the first point in developing your strategy. I've got 7 points here and we're just going to follow the bouncing ball and take as much time as we need. Have you got enough time today, John?
I have. I've always got time.
So the first one is know your why and know your goals. So my kind of thing around this is, and I always think like when I was sitting down with a client, they come in and say, hey, I want to invest. All right, why? If the answer is, I just want to be rich, the wheels will fall off pretty fast because there's a whole heap of thing where you think money's going to solve all your problems and all that. But if it's like, well, growing up, we didn't have much money and my family wasn't well off, I want to change that and I want to build a strong financial future for my family, like next year and also in the years to come. So I think really understanding the why that you want to invest and almost getting down to that financial bedrock in your life, then obviously writing down your goals.
Totally. Yeah. And I think the habits, you would argue, are just as important, aren't they, as the actual goal itself. And we're coming up to a time where it's the most common time to be setting a particular goal, isn't it? It's like, okay, the turn of the new year, let's set a goal because that's what everyone's doing. We don't want that goal to just peter away and look back in 4 months and say, oh, remember that goal I set on January 2? Mm. Like, oh, I've actually, it lasted 3 days and I lost momentum.
Well, they reckon most New Year's resolutions fail before Valentine's Day. So it's that 6 weeks into the year.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so important. You know, I am writing this investing book at the moment and the whole first chapter is about finding your why. And I really want to drill down into that whole bedrock. Like, what do you actually believe about money? Then what's your why? Then what are your goals? Because if we just haphazard and, you know, shiny objects, it's not a strategy. It's being clumsy. It's being impulsive. And, you know, with our businesses, you know, I had Shell come in and did a session with our team. And if you're a business owner, sidebar, get Shell in next year and bring your team together. We in the past had a heap of things going on and it was like shiny object syndrome. And we really distilled what we were about. And now we've developed a mission for the business that we exist to be an encouraging, fun, and relatable voice that leads our community to make meaningful life changes and unlock their potential. Now, why am I saying this? Well, any kind of flashy objects that I see in my business life or any opportunities that come up, before we put the team onto that, I just run that idea past this statement. Does that idea line up with we exist to be an encouraging, fun, and relatable voice that leads our community to make meaningful life changes and unlock their potential? So my question is, with your goals for your life, you have to have kind of almost a mission. That could be, I want to invest regularly to build wealth so my financial future is secure and money is not a problem for me tomorrow. Then what you can do is, when an opportunity comes up, oh, hey, Glenn, do you want to restore this old Cortina with me and we'll put it in your factory bay? And I'm like, whoa, 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 that money, does that line up with this goal and vision in my life?
Mm. Yeah, and I think that comes back to, and people talk about the SMART analogy for goals, doesn't it? Like specific, measurable, all those sort of things.
Attainable, relevant.
Yeah, and the relevance part is really important, isn't it? It's like everything that you're saying, coming back to what your mission is it relevant to me and my business, or is it relevant to me and my life? Because if it's not, then we just throw it out the window. And I think it's even more important now to be getting relevance around your goals, because there's so much fluff out there. There's so much keeping up with the person next door. There's so much information that we can be bombarded with, and all of a sudden we're down a track that we don't want to go down. And I think in addition to that, if you've got a partner, extremely important that we're on the same page and it's just not my goal and without any respect to my partner and what they might want along the journey as well.
Yeah, and this is, everyone's like, just hurry up and tell us where to invest. No, back off. Like, you nailed this crap. And I promise you, you'll have all the financial success in the world having a clear goal, a clear direction, having your partner on board. Like, it's really pretty simple, right?
Should be. But the communication part with the partner is where I think a lot of people get stuck.
Mm. All right. So you've nailed your why and your goals. The next thing we must do is ensure that your financial foundations are in place. When you coach a new client, John, that wants to build a property portfolio, what are you talking to them about in relation to kind of making sure your house is in order first? And you know, John just saw my 7 points probably 10 minutes ago because I'm like, oh, surely that would line up with what he does. But
yeah,
is that in conflict with, you know, purchasing property?
No, absolutely not. You're in respect to the asset type or the asset allocation, then that's a different conversation. But in terms of your financial foundations, nothing changes, does it? It's like, okay, do I know what comes in and out each week? Do I know what my cash flow buffer needs to be, and have I got it in place? Have I got my personal insurances? Like, the script is the same no matter who you're talking to around the world, isn't it?
Mm. And that's right. Like, if you want to build a future, build a sound financial house, guess what? Any builder, any architect, any engineer will say you've got to have strong foundations. And that is a law like gravity. You cannot get around gravity. You might think you can for a minute. You might go on one of those flights and they take you up and, oh, I'm at zero gravity. This is awesome. Mm. Guess what? At some point, the plane runs out of fuel. At some point, it comes down. You cannot get around gravity, and you cannot get around having sound and solid financial foundations in your life.
Yeah.
Much like you've just built a house, John, they probably spent the first 6 weeks doing the foundations.
Yes, absolutely. It needs to be strong from the bottom up, doesn't it? And I suppose early days when I was coaching, very guilty of someone coming to me and saying, and me asking them, well, do you know how much you spend each month? Oh, yeah, I've got a rough idea. This is how much I'm roughly saving each month. And I probably let that slide, but now, like probably in the last 5 years, I said, no, we're actually getting an exact number. There's a science to this, and we've got to have a plan, as boring as you may think it is. Those little wins each month over the next 10 years make a massive difference.
Yeah, so when we talk about foundations, if you've done the Glenn James spending plan, having a cash flow system is part of your foundation. Having an emergency fund, being out of consumer debt. And part of this process is, once you do your spending plan, developing your foundation of having that spending plan in place will actually give you real talk, real time, real data on how much money you actually have left over that you can commit to investing.
In these current times, like let's go back 2 years ago, interest rates 2%. If we're investing or lending money, or if we've got a mortgage, it's all easy street for most people. Fast forward to now, where it's like the real, it's the norm, 5-6% interest rates. It's shocked a lot of first time investors or first time mortgage owners. So it's like there's no better time to have your ducks in a row. And if we didn't have them in a row 2 years ago, it would have shocked, or has shocked, a lot of people. If we don't know how much we're spending and how much we're saving, if we didn't have our insurances in place, if we didn't have that asset protection, all of a sudden we're awake at night thinking, what the hell's just happened? I didn't prepare well. I didn't have those foundations. But the other part that needs to be mentioned is estate planning. If we're building all of this wealth, or we're trying to, and we're acquiring assets, and we're maybe creating a legacy to pass it on to family members, we've got to have our wills and estate in order. We've got to have that as a first port of call long before we actually go and buy the asset.
Yeah. And part of the estate planning is making sure your superannuation beneficiaries are in order, they're up to date, you don't have the ex-partner still on there. And all that stuff. It's funny, John, I'm at the age now, like, all my friends and people that I know, they're getting married for a second time.
Wow.
I'm like, I haven't even had one go yet.
Yeah.
Can you give me a go?
Well, you're just going to make the right choice, aren't you? You only need one crack at it. You're just warming up to it.
So yeah, step one, your why and your goals. Step two, ensure your financial foundations are in place. Now, these kind of things can be going in tandem. So you could know that you're in consumer debt and you need to get rid of a credit card because you can't pay it off and you're paying interest. You know that you might not have an emergency fund. So you could be going, all right, I'm going to build my emergency fund, and over the next few months, next 6 months, or however long it takes, I can be really looking at my goals and what I want my life to look like. So it's not like sequential, like I'm going to live in financial squalor until, yeah. You know, and not clean up my mess because I'm focusing on my goals and my why. No, you're an adult, like...
But I think, get to work.
I think maybe we're all guilty of saying, oh, that's the boring stuff. I'll get to it one day. But that one day never happens because we're too excited to go and purchase and acquire assets right now without the foundations.
Yeah. So what I want to do now is move to the third point, and that is we've got our why and our goals. We've got our strong foundations in place, and because there could be some time involved to get to this third point, I want you to, before you move on, be rock solid on your timeline. So we have to be realistic. And my kind of overarching financial goal is to build wealth. And because it is so broad, you do have the most options. But if someone had a financial goal of, I want to put my two kids through private school, what you need to do is you need to go, okay, let's make an assumption of how much per year that we will need in 10 years' time. Then have a look at what you're saving now. And what I made a note of, John, like just in the early stages, just use a bit of bush maths. Like if it's, okay, well, I know at the moment the current private school fee is $5,000 a year. I've got one child, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 grand, or however many years they're at school. I kind of need to be able to save up 30 grand throughout this time. But to get me to the first paid year and the second paid year, I might need 5 to 10. Like, let's just get some bush maths. Let's not worry at this stage about investment returns. Let's just know, is this reasonable? Because I would like to buy an Aston Martin DB11 or 12 or whatever they're up to, right, in 2 years. It's not realistic or reasonable for me because I'm not putting that much money away over the next 24 months. Like, it's a non-starter, not doing it. So it's nice to have goals, but you need to make sure those goals aren't just fantasies or dreams.
Absolutely. And it gives us the motivation to continue when there might be a snag or a roadblock that comes our way. And you talk about the private schooling, and that's a great deal, by the way, $5,000 a year for private schooling.
I've got no idea.
Times that by six. And in any case, you look at it and say, well, okay, I might be having kids in the next 3 years. It may take another 12 months for that to play out. So there's, let's say, 4. Then they'll go to school at age, well, let's say it's high school, private school. Okay, they're going to be 12 when they hit private school, or 13. So basically in 16 to 17 years, I need to have a pool of funds dedicated to private schooling. And that's what you're talking about in respect to the bush maths and the numbers. But we can reverse engineer it over the next 17 years so it doesn't come as a surprise and then we've got 12 months to save all this money. It's not practical.
Talk to us about being rock solid on a timeline and goals when it comes to purchasing an investment property.
Yeah, look, time can easily go by and all of a sudden we wake up and we've done nothing for the last 5 years. We had a clear intention to purchase a property and it just hasn't happened through life. So again, reverse engineering it to say, well, okay, a goal in January 2024 might be, I want to purchase a property this year. And when I'm having conversations with clients, I say, well, why have we got that timeline on this particular goal? Is it just because it's a round number, or is it, okay, it's the whole year, so that makes sense? Is there anything stopping you from purchasing it in the next 2 months versus the next 12 months? Oh, well, no, not really. Because the longer you leave these goals or these action steps, the more potential for something in your life to disrupt your goal. And it's like, okay, am I financially able to go and invest now? Yes. Is my mindset at the point where I want to invest now? Yes. Okay, so what's stopping us? Is it just because your goal says I want to invest in 12 months? Okay, let's rehash that and say, well, now we can actually make it the next 3 months. So really important to have that time and be clear on the outcome for you and not to rush it, but also not to leave it too long either, because obviously you've got your money investing and it's starting to work for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And just as you're finishing there, John, before we get to the next step, which is, you know, we really start to get spicy, by this time, because we've really distilled our goals and we are realistic about our time frame, I believe we really need to understand our own personal risk tolerance and really get comfortable with stepping out and actually taking action. Because how many people do we know that, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to invest in that, I want, like,
we need to be able to step out and get started. And yeah, it's understanding if you've got any fears and really just working through that, because the first three points, we're getting ready for launch. Like, we're very clear on what we're doing. We've got our foundations in place. We're rock solid on our time frame. Now what we need to do, we need to move into point four, and it's kind of a two-part. There's 4A and 4B, and this is where it gets a little bit tactile. We need to select the appropriate structure, but we need to consider tax, estate planning, asset protection. So we need to look at the structure. Then we need to look at what the investment selection or the asset is within that structure.
Absolutely. Yeah, and this is really the only one out of the seven that is about the actual purchase, isn't it? It's like, okay, this is, I've got an overarching strategy and there's seven parts to that, but this is the strategy within the strategy, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the tactics to the strategy. Like, we have a strategy to do X and we need the tactics to achieve that strategy.
Yeah. So where do you start with that? Do you say, well, okay, there's two major asset classes. Do I choose one of those?
Yeah, so are you talking like shares, property or whatnot?
Yeah.
Yeah, so how I start, we will assume that we're not interested in property, right? Like, we want to save for...
What? What did I just hear? Yeah, go on.
We'll assume that we want to save for, I need $30,000 in X amount of years, in 6 years, because at that point, my kids will be old enough and I want to do the Disneyland thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so... we need $30,000. So we need to run through the like that sieve that I talked about. Well, let's look at estate planning, asset protection, tax, and accessibility. We know that superannuation as a structure is off the table, right?
Because?
Well, if you need the money within, how long did I say, 10 years, and you're 40 years old, well, there's no point building wealth in super.
Okay.
But if you're 50... and you need the money in 10 years, well, enter superannuation, potentially.
Yeah.
What other structures are there? Well, we can't use an education bond because a trip to Disneyland isn't education. Other structures available could be an investment bond where we want to save this money for Disneyland. If I die, I would like that money to go to the kids anyway and bypass the will and the estate plan. So you may... decide, because it is over 10 years and the 10-year rule with an investment bond. And if you want more details, there's an episode, 6 Ways to Invest for Your Kids. We might use an investment bond. Probably not in this situation if it is mum and dad saving up. You might say, well, the mortgage, we've got an offset account, interest rates are 6%. And I really think for such a short-term thing, even if it is 10 years, I'm basing everything on bush maths and if I get a bigger return, that's just a bonus. Or once I'm at my goal earlier, I can decide to pull the trigger then, because I don't love financial projections, because we can't control the world, but we can control the buying power or the amount that we actually put aside. So we'll say super isn't appropriate. We'll say investment bonds are not appropriate. We'll say education bonds are not appropriate. Now, there's a couple of other structures. We'll say a trust isn't appropriate because we don't have one set up and we're not going to do that just to invest a little bit of money for the short term. The other options we kind of have is mortgage offset account, and we're just going to save cash and know that we get a guaranteed 6% return, like not taxed. Dollar saved is a dollar earned and all that. You might do that. That's an option. And then the investment selection is nil. It doesn't happen. The other two options with this strategy is, well, there's three options really, a joint account that's in your own name or the two spouses' name. If you're single, it's obviously you've only got one option. Or the other options are to put the whole amount in an account in the lower income earner's name or the higher income earner's name for whatever reason. So
are you talking to your accountant in regards to that before you pull the trigger?
Yeah, you might. But I think once you really understand some basics, that any income that is earned, if someone's on a lower tax rate, that income is going to be taxed less than someone that's on the higher marginal tax rate. Some other considerations with structure for this example could be the estate planning and the asset protection. So if you're a small business owner and you carry a fair bit of risk, do you put it in the non-risk carrying spouse's name, which could be a higher income earner because that's really the asset protection there.
Yeah, and sometimes you can't have your cake and eat it if you got one but not the other. Which one's more important?
Yeah. So in the scenario of saving money over 10 years for Disneyland for the family, we're not doing kids' accounts. We might set up an investment account in the lower spouse's name or in one spouse's name. Or if you want to get really wild and all that, you could do an account in each name and have the mirrored investment options. And then there's a little bit of protection there for family breakdown and all that stuff if you're, you know, newly together.
What's your view around people come and say, okay, I want to create some wealth for our kids. I want to buy a house each, or I want to create an account that's purely for the kids, right? What's your thoughts on that? Is it more important to grow wealth overall because then you can disperse it any which way at any stage, or do you have specific kids' accounts? Because obviously you can't set up an investment bond for a child if the child's not born yet, but people are thinking about this stuff.
Yeah, I don't want to get bogged down in this conversation with that, all to say you need to listen to my two episodes on investing for kids.
Yeah, you need to.
But my resolution thing was just build wealth.
Yes.
So we need to really look at the asset structures and the entities. A private company, we're not doing that. We're not investing in a private company. So if you kind of, with your strategy and with your goals, kind of start to write down what isn't an option, it might become apparent. And then what we need to do, like most of these entities, super, investment bonds in your own name, they will generally have access to the same investments. Because remember, it's an entity, it's a structure, and you can choose a variety of investments. Now, I personally believe in broad-based index investing. So that might mean, well, we're not going to just buy CBA shares. We're going to buy a blended portfolio. If you aren't heaps confident in making your own choices, I'll actually swing back and read it because I forgot to read it at the start of the episode. This whole episode came about because Mel in the Facebook wrote, "Can anyone point me to an episode that talks through different strategies? I'm finding myself a little frustrated that a lot of financial podcasts, not so much My Millennial Money, describe in a very general terms how to invest. They flag the fact that you want to understand what you're investing in and understand why you're choosing a particular strategy, but leave it there. I'd love an episode or podcast that dives a little further into the detail. Any recommendations?" Further on, like Mel said, "Oh, I'm currently invested in Vanguard Diversified High Growth Fund." I'm like, yeah, sweet, does the job. And this is the thing. We might have something set up and because we're hearing all these podcasts, we're thinking that, oh, I'm not sophisticated enough. This isn't the right strategy. So to be honest, Mel, you know, there isn't that much to choosing a particular strategy if it is based on goals. It all comes back to your goals. Because if I go back to the spending plan and, you know, be rock solid on our timeline, if we need to save $3,000 a year for 10 years to get to $30,000, right? We've got to make sure in our spending plan that we have a spare $3,000.
Like, it'd be realistic, doesn't it?
You could find an online calculator and work out an investment calculator and I'll read out some assumptions on some returns here for portfolios and you could back calculate it. But when it comes to money, more is more. And I really think that there is nothing wrong with having Vanguard Diversified High Growth or Vanguard Diversified Growth as an investment vehicle. Like, build wealth, get on with it.
And less complicated, you'd say?
Yeah. But you may choose to build your own portfolio. Nick on the My Millennial Investor podcast talks about building a three-fund portfolio. So some international equities. I think he uses like an IVV. You might do 40% there. You might do 40% in IOZ, Australian equities. And then you might do the balance in like a bond fund or some bonds or property or a little bit of gold. But you're going to have to rebalance that portfolio every now and again. And within all this stuff, you've got to think about your strategy. Do I want a brokerage account that I have to keep track of all dividends, investing, buys and sells? Or do you do what I do and have a platform and the reporting is done automatically every year? I just got my end of year financial report from my platform and I don't have to worry about dividend reinvesting and calculating this and all that. So I want my part of my investing strategy to be simple.
So how much of this comes back to your interest in the asset and you wanted to take control and be active with it all versus passive?
I think I want to get to that in one of the other points, because one of the points coming forward is about keeping focused. But one of your goals, like in the first point, might be I want to buy property. Why? Oh, I've always been interested in listening to John's podcast. I've always been interested in reading John's new property book, Sort Your Property Out and Get Invested. It's available. There's a link in the show notes. Weren't going to mention it today, but you can pre-order it. Like you might just have some horniness towards property and no one, you can't explain it. Like,
just is what it is.
It is what it is. And so when it comes to, talk to me about appropriate structures with property.
Yeah, look, in regards to property, what you've mentioned is not too dissimilar. You're looking at it saying, well, what do I need to achieve with this asset, i.e. how long am I holding it for, what type of property am I buying, and what do I need in my life? Do I need some tax benefits? Do I need some asset protection? Because that's the difference with property as opposed to shares, is majority of the time when you're buying property, if not all the time, you're going to lend money. So there's another element, whereas a lot of the time with shares, you might not be doing that. You're just using cash. So there's another layer of consideration to say, well, which is going to be the best buying entity for lending, but also my asset protection. So personal name is, I would say, if 100 property strategies come across my desk, I'd say 90 of them would be in personal names, followed by unit trusts, if they're wanting to have a high cash flow property strategy, or they're wanting to do a development and turn it over quickly and distribute funds, etc. Because of the ease of lending, or easier, and the considerations such as land tax in each state, you've got different thresholds in your personal name, whereas if you buy in a company, for example, there's no threshold. So you've got to factor in all of those things to then come to the conclusion, well, majority of the time your personal name is going to be the most beneficial. If we need to have, and when you mentioned before about low income earner, high income earner, if there's two people buying property, Sometimes you rob Peter to pay Paul, the saying goes. So you might say, well, I'm getting tax benefits in the highest income earner's name for the first 10 years of holding the property. Then I sell it and that person gets whacked the most capital gains tax. So it's getting the benefits now or get the benefit later. At the end, again, we might just go back to a 50-50 percentage split.
But even with the property, it still comes down to goals and your life stage and age, because if someone is in their 50s and they want to buy a property, they might say, look, we want to just buy and hold for the next 10 years. That's going to be a different property than someone in their early 30s might be buying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The cash flow considerations are so important with property because of the holding cost being greater. So I think that's often neglected, isn't it? But absolutely the age is super important to know what's it going to look like in 10 years' time or 20 years' time when I'm retired.
Let's just run another scenario and then I'll get into some assumptions with returns. Someone has this why of, I want a dignified retirement, okay? And why? Well, you know, grew up, we didn't have much money. My parents have just retired and they don't even have money to enjoy life, and they're on the pension, which isn't a bad thing. It's a social safety net, and they don't have much. Like, they didn't focus on this, and I don't want that to be me. So we've ensured that our financial foundations are in place. We've got our emergency fund. we want to make sure that we've got our income protection, our life insurance, our estate planning sorted. We are rock solid in our timeline. We just want to make sure we're 30 years old. Over the next 30 years, we build wealth. We don't really care about property. So we just want to build wealth. Like if we then go down to selecting an appropriate structure, there's a no-brainer that it's superannuation up to the $27,500 cap because you're building wealth in a tax-effective environment. We don't need the money because we've got our foundation in order and our spending plan. Mm. We don't need the money until 30 years because our goal is to build wealth for our future retirement. We're happy with our job. So then we need to say, okay, well, super is a no-brainer and salary sacrifice. Then what we're going to do is within that, you may decide as a couple, if there's two people working, we're going to either do a superannuation splitting to level the accounts. We're both going to sacrifice. Someone else is going to sacrifice for whatever reasons. And then the investment selection, you know, if we're in our 30s, we know that we can't touch the money for at least 30 years.
Mm.
So we know that we need a higher growth portfolio. And just everyone grab a pen. When we talk about portfolios, it's probably safe to assume that a high growth portfolio of 90% growth, 10% defensive is over a 20-year period, it's probably around 8% or inflation plus 5%. So the real return might be around 5%. A growth portfolio of 70% growth, 30% defensive, you can probably assume over a 20-year period that it's CPI plus 4%. Balanced, which is a 50-50 portfolio. And just be careful, peeps. Your super funds will say, this is a balanced portfolio and it'll be 70 or 80% growth. A real balanced portfolio that balances CPI plus 3%. So it could be 6-ish percent over 20 years. But if we're building wealth, and for me personally, my goal is to live on less than I earn, be a generous giver, and to invest the rest. I just want to build wealth. I don't really care if it ends up 8 or 9% because I'm living on less than I earn. I'm building wealth. Mm. And that, to me, my strategy, it's maxing out super. It's investment properties. It's money in my own investing account. So for that scenario, super is going to be a no-brainer. Now, you might be thinking, well, what if things change? Well, you can always press pause. Or part of your strategy might be, well, we've got $1,000 a month left over after we've done our spending plan. We are going to hedge our bet a little bit and put 70% in super and 30% invest in our own name. That's also an option. One final thing with your investment selection, whether it is a portfolio, 50% IOZ, 50% IVV, Australia and America, which is aka a lot of the world anyway, or VDGR, Vanguard Diversified Growth Fund, with your investment selections, I don't care how cute your investing strategy is, never, ever, ever ignore diversification, ever, because you'll get flush one day. John, talk to us about diversification when it comes to building property portfolios, because it is a little bit of a trap if you want to buy a property and you only have one investment property.
Yeah, the common part of the diversification question or conversation is location around the country. Have I got all my eggs in one basket buying in one particular location? Do I want some diversification outside of that, just that area where I live or where my owner occupier is? Because if the market stays flat there, then your whole portfolio remains flat for that period of time. Conversely, if it goes up 100%, then your whole portfolio performs at that level. The other conversation for diversification is land tax, which can be a killer, especially as your portfolio grows. Now, you might not be anywhere near the threshold at the moment, which we spoke before about the asset class or the buying entity that we're buying into, but in 10 years' time, 15 years' time, if you've got a strategy of long-term buy and hold, you may well be liable for land tax, which is payable every year, and it can very much soon add up. as opposed to saying, well, okay, we've got a long-term vision to buy and hold. We might just allocate some funds to buy in two or three different states, and that way I've covered all bases as long as those locations and that type of property and my overall strategy fits that purpose.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to property and diversification, you said to me once when I called you, as I do erratically, and I'm like, oh, the unit next door's for sale, should I buy it? And you're like, no, you've already got exposure to that area.
And yeah, and that's a really common one. Like, it's just not you that rings me with that sort of question. It's a lot of people, because you know the area, you're comfortable with it. You might even know the owner, which can be even more dangerous. We're emotionally wrapped up in it. My question, I think, to you at the time and to everyone else is, would you buy that if it didn't come up for sale? Like, would that be an asset or a location that you'd be looking at anyway?
And often the answer is no.
Sometimes it is. Yeah, correct. So, yeah.
There isn't much rocket surgery or brain science when it comes to this, because if you're very clear on your goals and the direction for your life, a lot of the time you might have a strategy now that's fine. Like, I don't know Mel's situation, but what's wrong with building wealth the way she's got it at the moment? Don't be distracted with all this stuff and think you have to go and change everything or you're not sophisticated enough. So, recapping the first 4 points, then we'll have a quick break. One, your why and your goals. Two, ensure financial foundations are in place. Three, be rock solid on your timeline. Four, select the appropriate structure. 4B, what investment selection will you use? We'll be back right after this.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Okay, we are back for the community segment of the week. We asked everyone, what's one thing about investing in shares that you wish you'd known sooner? Tim said, I wish I'd been introduced to shares at an earlier age. It's a good one.
Leanne says, I wish I bought more.
Alexandra, that it is exactly like any shopping online and you don't need a significant amount to jump in. It's for everyone, not just for some category of people.
This is a good one. Claire says, tax implications. Hubby is in mining and gets a bonus every year, but in shares this year we got a $27,000 tax bill. Ooh.
Yeah, well, that's kind of just on that. Any dividends that you get, even if you reinvest dividends or take income from your shares, it lands on the tax return each year and it is taxable income. And also CGT. Michelle, I wish I'd taken that job working on the stock market floor at 19 back in 1998.
Would have been a good apprenticeship, Michelle.
So there you go. Well, that was the community segment of the week. We'll bounce out of that into the housekeeping, and it is brought to you, the community segment of the week is brought to you by Sky Wealth. One of your financial foundations is to have life insurance and income insurance in place. They've got a webinar that's actually tonight, Tuesday the 14th of November, Understanding Personal Insurance, Expert Insights, Pitfalls, and a Live Case Study. Now, I'm not reading the script. Get your bloody insurance sorted. John, I was yesterday got prompted with a request from a friend to donate to a GoFundMe to a family whose father, the dad died in his 30s, three young kids, no life insurance, mortgage left over.
Wow.
And it's just, I've seen the difference day and night with having some life insurance in place, and if someone dies, the difference with not having life insurance in place. I'm talking at the moment with another friend in Melbourne, young family, couple of kids, terminal illness, in his 30s. It's too late to be insured. He's got no life insurance and no default cover in his superannuation.
Wow.
It literally upsets me so much knowing that life insurance is available. And the thing is, anyone listening to this and anyone with a young family and with debt, you've got no excuse after hearing these words to not get life insurance because you now know it's available.
Yeah.
Pay it out of your super. Like, don't be selfish, because if you bloody die, your family's going through hell grieving you. Imagine the difference of having no debt and 500 grand in the bank versus having a $6,000 mortgage still every month.
Yeah, which is, in a lot of cases, the difference between having to sell the asset and keep them and pass them through.
Like, so Sky Wealthfare, a partner, they're a sponsor of the show. Full disclosure, everyone. If you don't use Sky Wealth, I don't care. Like, just get protected. If you're worried about conflict of interest with Sky Wealth and this podcast, when it comes to insurance, I don't bloody care. Yeah. Just go and get your life insurance sorted.
Cost of living, factor it in.
Shouldn't have made that donation yesterday because it made me think about it. And it just really upset me that this family's got nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, to lighter news, there's a one and only podcast live event that's happening this year.
Wow.
Unfortunately, if you don't live in Newcastle, you're either flying in, driving in, or not coming. We're doing a welcome to summer party on Thursday, the 7th of December. We're keeping this 30 people. It's only $34. We'll feed you. We'll drink you. 7 p.m., there's a new cafe on Beaumont Street called Bowie. And 7 till 9.30 p.m., Shell will join me, John, not invited. But
it's too far. I'm in bed by then.
Yeah. No, he can't make it. So Shell and I, we're going to catch up with everyone. We're going to record a live podcast, have some food, have some drinks. You'll see this awesome new cafe, and it's the only live podcast My Millennial Money event that we've done all year, because I had a bit of a break from live events this year. But I really, everyone's always like, do a Newcastle one.
Did you miss them? I missed them this year.
Yeah, I did, but, you know, I'm not doing them for free. It was a bit hard to get sponsorship money. And this
so
one,
if you're a business owner out there and a big timer that wants to sponsor next year.
But yeah, so this one, it's literally, it's a non-profit thing. You know, the $34 is literally just covering the food and the piss. Jack's even giving us the venue at no cost. So there you have it. And finally, if you want to keep in touch a bit more with the community, have a subscribe to our emails. We're having a lot of fun doing fortnightly updates and little written things that we're doing and keep you in the loop. So there's a link in the show notes. All right. Sorry, everyone, about my rant with the life insurance. I've just had so many people in my world die with young kids and debt. And it just honestly breaks my heart. And it's not, I'm not mad at them because they didn't know. I'm mad at people listening to this with debt and dependents who don't get off their ass and get some death cover.
Yeah.
Now, if you're medically declined and all that, that's another conversation. You might be able to get some accident cover or keep what you have. But honestly, guys, you get one shot at this crap. Yeah. And you can do all the investing in the world and all this strategy stuff in the world, but if something happens and you need to sell down the portfolio and sell the property, if it's at the worst time, well, you could be selling it at a loss if there's been a little correction in the property or the share market.
Yeah, and we've spoken about foundations and getting them in order first. It's extremely important. And people unfortunately believe that they've got enough in as default cover in their super as well.
Yeah, I've never seen a default amount in a super fund be adequate. All right, we'll bump out of the community segment and the housekeeping part of the podcast right now. Thanks, everyone, for still joining us. We're having a lot of fun. One, two, three, four. The fifth strategy point. You've got everything. You've pulled the trigger. You're investing monthly into your share portfolio. You're paying down your principal and interest or your interest-only mortgage consideration on your investment property. You've got everything humming along. The next point, let your strategy work while you get back to work. Like, let it do its thing. Because the more that you want to tweak it and, you know, dick around and play around with it, the more you're going to do something dumb. So you've spent all this time building your financial life. You've spent all this time nailing your goals. Let your strategy do its thing.
Question.
Yeah.
What if you're an active investor?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Let's move to the next point. Point six. I want you to also keep focused. Now, what that could mean, if you're an active investor, I mean, it's probably you know, if you're talking about flipping properties, that's actually the strategy.
Yeah.
If it's buy and hold, well, buy it, hold it, get on with your life. So property, if you're an active investor, you're probably flipping properties every couple of years, right? That's the strategy. Now, if it's when it comes to shares and equities, this fifth point, this sixth point with keeping focused, what you can do, and this is what I do, just carve out a portion of your portfolio, 10%, and use that to keep you in the game. Nick on the Investor Podcast talks about it. I do it. I talk about it. Morgan Housel, The Psychology of Money book, which is awesome, he talks about it. Having small superficial amounts to buy speccies, to, you know, buy individual shares and all that stuff, that will keep you in the game as long as you keep your mitts off the main stuff. Now, that could mean, in real terms, you set up a brokerage account or a investment platform for your lion's share investments. You might have $1,000 a month. You're putting $900 in long-term broad-based ETFs, and that $100 a month goes into your little portfolio, and you can trade or buy, oh, okay, I'm going to buy CBA or JB Hi-Fi, or I want to try some little options, things like that stuff. It is of personal interest, so why not keep interested? You know, the keep focused part, it's not only keeping focused on the actual investing. More importantly, it's keeping focused and having your goals front of mind. Listen to podcasts, listen to audiobooks, run everything past the mission that you wrote at the first point. So if you do get an opportunity, oh, hey, Glenn, do you want to invest in this bloody spec here? It's a property development, need 100 grand. No, like it just, it's too speculative. It doesn't line up with my buy and hold. I may entertain it with 10% of my portfolio or less, probably won't, but we run shiny objects and opportunities past our own investing mission.
Yeah, I like that.
And that's the same like in the property world. Like you might get a client where they've done some strategy with you and they're about to buy a property, and then they call you and say, oh, John, mate of mine, we want to do a mini development together. And it's like, well, 10 minutes ago, you told me that you wanted to buy a single property and buy and hold forevermore. Amen.
And probably the biggest one I cop is I want to buy an investment property, and then in the second breath, and I want to buy my principal place of residence in 3 years.
Yeah.
We can't do both, but we don't think long-term enough. So I think that that ties into that, doesn't it? We've got to push out 10 years and then swing back around and think, right, what's going to be relative for now that's still suitable in 10 years for me?
Totally. And that is that, you know, keeping focused on the goal in conversation with your partner, if you've got one, listening to podcasts like this. And a lot of the time, many of you listen to this and you're quite advanced in your money, but you're doing it for encouragement, for entertainment, to keep you focused.
Yeah.
That's why I listen to personal finance podcasts. I don't listen to many, but when I do, I might listen to one a week. I actually listen to Nick's My Millennial Investor every Friday on the way to TAFE, little 20-minute episodes, and that keeps me in the game because I've got no creative control over his content.
Hmm.
It's awesome. I don't even look at the spreadsheet and the team planning and all that stuff.
Yeah,
I just
good.
Get it dealt to me every Friday and I love it. So
perfect.
Keep invested in your goal. And the good thing about working your goal out and taking the time to build your financial foundation is to really solidify the goal. And even with the rock solid on your timeline, back to point three, before we get to the last point, point seven, like draw, I've got like my bit of paper here, draw a line, right? And then put now, then put 3 years, then put 5+ years. Now, I don't think you would want to hugely be planning anything micro for 5 years' time. It might be that safer education because things change. Like what if now, between now and 3 years, you might put child or family, might be first home, and then in 3 years' time, then it might be invest for future, it might be international travel, it could be live overseas, live abroad. So that's kind of like if you somehow write it down and get it on paper, that will help you triage the goal, because we can have multiple goals and they need to be triaged with, like, what can be implemented now, what's a slow burn and savings and all that stuff. And there, as I said, there could be multiple strategies. We want to build wealth for the future. We want to also save for some child's education. Well, we've got enough money free in our life, so we reckon we can put X amount a month for some private schooling, and then the rest we'll just throw in super or an investment property. And I'm using the child education thing because it's such a short-term lumpy goal that you can actually invest for. So yeah, keep focused. Got to always keep focused. Now, point seven, and this is like once yearly, at worst, 6 monthly. Like, we're not doing this every 10 minutes, but just keep an eye and review the strategy versus the goals. So just, I don't know, set an alarm in your calendar. Just come up for air, okay? I've been working, I've been keeping focused on all this, going to come up for air and say, yeah, I'm really, this strategy is working fine. Or it could be, well, little Mary or little Johnny, they're not going to be cut out for this private school thing. They're going to thrive in the public school. So we've reviewed that. It's like, okay, well, yeah, one of the kids probably, yep, they're really going to go to private school. Yeah, we're reviewing. Yep, the goal is school. Well, hey, we don't need to pay for this kid.
Yeah, and what a great feeling when you wake up with an extra 50 grand that you thought you were spending on schooling.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is about reviewing the strategy versus the goal. Are they still in tandem? Because the strategy should be going along to achieve the goal. And the bigger deviation in strategy versus goal, the higher chance that it won't happen, right?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I would add to that, I suppose, and say, well, design your own life. And we've sort of touched on that at the start with the goals, but so you don't have to follow suit and stay in the box that is work 9 to 5 for the next 40 years and climb the corporate ladder if that's truly what you don't want. Like, I was chatting to a client last week, and she's not even 40 and working 3 days a week and has built a portfolio that's cash flow positive and just doesn't want to work any more than 3 days a week. She's just got a really good balance of life. She knows she could achieve much more financially if she did work 5, but that's not her, and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you want your life to be? That's the question.
Mm.
And realistically, you can't wreck it if you live on less than you earn, be a generous giver, invest the rest. How are you going to wreck it? Don't get stuck in this, oh, I don't know if I should buy A200 or IOZ. Pick one and pump it. Like, it's all good. Like, you haven't ignored diversification with single stock risk. Sure, IOZ, A200s or VAS, it's Australian equities, but at least it's diversified. If you're comfortable and only want to do Aussie equities, knock yourself out. You lay in the bed you make for yourself, and you're not going to ever have any single stock risk doing that portfolio. So I just want to say, like, in this whole strategy thing, Mel, you're probably more on track than what you think. You might be hearing all these different strategies. Like, we might talk about a strategy on the My Millennial Investor podcast about, oh, yeah, so Nick's doing some options trading with a couple of $1,000 a month or something like that. Oh, should I be doing that? Well, no, because that's not your strategy. It's his thing, and it's his thing that keeps him interested. So as much as we need to keep encouraged by listening to podcasts, the reason why we have to keep focused on our goals and have them front of mind all the time linked to our strategy is so we can appreciate when we hear something that's a strategy and that's a tactic that someone else is using that isn't for me, because that's not my goal. I've got a goal of this, they're doing that. I'm very comfortable with how I'm investing at the moment.
While I was listening intently to you, it reminded me to jump on and check the kids' investment bond that you set up for me so kindly 5 years ago now. And it's a great example of, I looked at the balance like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. It's a great example of just set and forget. I've got this auto debit each month, and you wake up in 10 years' time and kids, here's a few funds that you can put towards your life. So it's just that playing that long game, isn't it?
Yeah. And the more I don't focus on my investing account and my bank accounts, the more they grow because I'm focused on getting to work. You know, let your strategy work while you get back to work.
Mm.
And that's why we made the book Sort Your Career Out, which is the prequel to Sort Your Money Out, which is the prequel to Sort Your Property Out, because the best financial strategy that most people have in their life is their ability to generate income and be happy along the way.
Design your own people.
Yeah, you can do it. If I could do this, an unsophisticated bogan from Berkeley Vale, anyone can do this stuff. It's not hard. Money is not hard. Sure, there are some tax implications. There's estate planning things that, you know, the more money you have, you'll get some professional help. But don't overcook it.
No.
You can download the Sharesies app. They're not even a sponsor of the podcast anymore. Mm. You can download the Sharesies app and get started with $5 today. It'll be in your own name. That could suit your strategy.
And you may argue that we're preaching to the converted tuning in today, but I would challenge you to, if you're listening, to send this episode to someone that may not be inclined to listen to something like this and just, put it in their ears.
So let's recap on the 7 steps to create an investment strategy. The first one, know your why and your goals. The second one, ensure financial foundations are in place. 3, be rock solid on your timeline. Is it realistic to your goals? 4, select an appropriate structure, and we're talking tax structure, we're talking estate planning structure. 4B, select the appropriate investment. Are you doing a one-stop shop, Vanguard Diversified High Growth, DHHF, or are you building a little portfolio of ETFs, IVV, IOZ? Like, how are you doing this? 5, let your strategy work while you go back to work. Keep your mitts off it. You spend all this time planning, let it work. Stop bloody touching it. 6, keep focused. More keep focused on the goal. Keep focused. Don't get distracted. 7, review your strategy against your goals at least once a year, at worst every 6 months, because we don't want to be reviewing it every 10 minutes.
Nah, love it. Have some patience.
Thanks for listening today. You've been real. I've been Glenn, and this guy has been
John Pigeon.
And if you are in Newcastle, I would love if you can join us for our Welcome to Summer party. The tickets, at the time of this recording, there's already tickets being sold and there's only 30. So there's a link in the show notes to them. So yeah, and at the live event in Newcastle, John, I'm going to share some secrets about next year.
Really?
Oh yeah. Big secrets.
What are you going through, a brand change?
No, I'm not.
You personally?
Yeah, maybe. There's some big secrets. John doesn't even know the secrets, everyone. He's not going to find out because he's not going to be there, is he?
No, nothing's new.
Nothing's new.
We acknowledge the Awabakal people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast. My Millennial Money supports a variety of charities, and we encourage you to consider giving as part of your overall financial strategy. If you would like some giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to mymillennial.money/charities for more info. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
So you've probably, I just want to update everyone. When I was in the States, I got an email that I selected the wrong license for the music. that we use on our shows.
Oh, yes.
And what a nightmare. So I always wanted to do things right. And, you know, in my businesses from day one, like we've never used pirated software. We pay for Audition. We pay for like all the Adobe suites. We pay for Office, like all the subscriptions. Like I don't think you can actually have a prosperous career or a business if you're doing things dodgy.
Yeah.
So with the best intentions, I paid for music. That was the intros to the show. And some of the mid-roll music and all that stuff. And we bought another song a couple of weeks ago. And obviously they've seen that there's a company that bought it, been flagged. Next minute they're like, oh, hey, Glenn, tell us about your podcast. one thing was effectively the intro music, everyone. The license that I had purchased was for single use only, which means I should have paid each time an episode was on. I thought single use was like one project. No, single use. We've done 500 episodes. We've used the song 500 times. Like, pretty wild. And so anyway, I was in New York at the time and it really like upset my first week in America because I'm like stressing.
You're rattled.
Sweating. I'm rattled. I'm like, oh my gosh, what a nightmare. Because if you like, get your calculator, everyone, and be like, $40 times 500.
Shit.
What did they say? But it's not only $40 because we might have used two songs in each episode. And so when I was in the States, I'm like, all right, I'm stopping all music now. I'm just, this is wrong. I want to correct it. And thankfully, I was talking to the managing director at the it's an international company that we get our songs from. And so I'm like, stop using it. I just want to enjoy my break and I'm going to deal with this when I get back. And so they basically said, look, for you to pay us, it's going to be over $100,000.
Really?
For what you've used. But we understand that it was a mistake at your heart. And like, you've been great. We want to – the long story short was they still want to pay the musicians and send some money to the musicians.
Right.
And just while we've been recording, like yesterday I had a phone conversation with the managing director because we were in copyright breach.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be breaking the law. Yep. And I've actually settled and backpaid since 2018.
Right.
So you're not getting any money next month, John.
Wow.
Actually, I should withhold some payments from my hosts. So. Wow. Yeah, I mean, they were great and they understood that I didn't want to do the right thing. I wanted to make sure artists were paid.
Yeah.
But their website just wasn't clear at all. And they admitted to me that, yeah, it's not clear. I'm like, well, far out. I would have appreciated this phone call 4 years ago.
Yeah, totally. Not just 10 minutes.
So we've agreed on an amount that I'll back pay. Right. I'm a bit raw and wounded. So I'm like, I don't even want to think about intro music right now. So yeah. I think what we're going to do is I'm too emotionally hurt.
Drained.
I just can't even think about I'm like, no intro music. We got Nathan to find the music that you're hearing at the end and in the middle of the show now.
Yeah.
It is now free, royalty-free.
Mm.
It's all good to use with all that stuff, so there's no breach there.
Yeah.
I just don't have the mental and emotional energy to think about intro music at the moment for the shows.
Yeah. Do you want me to sing?
No, we're all right, thanks. but what we will probably – to be honest, I don't mind not having any intro music.
Nah.
It's just straight to the point.
Like, yeah,
who cares?
Yeah,
if you're listening to them back to back, just hit me, baby.
Yeah,
so, yeah, look, it's not fun – to back pay 5 years worth of royalties. But I admitted, like, yep, you're right, I'm in the wrong. And that leads to another discussion about my sometimes impulsiveness and lack of detail.
Yeah.
So Yeah, so you're not getting any.
Don't need that when you're in the US.
No, I'm like, I'm trying to host, like I was the MC at FinCon hosting that, trying to enjoy New York.
Yeah.
I'm like having meltdowns with Sim and Phil because they were in New York and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then
yeah,
the Cheese and the Money Girls were there and I'm like melting down to them. And
How did FinCon go?
Yeah, it was good. They want me to MC next year, I think, as well.
Oh, really?
So FinCon's a conference in the States for personal finance creators. There's about 1,800 attendees. And they have a couple of big all-in sessions with a huge auditorium with like over 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was the host and MC and did all the intros for the main stage speakers and learnt heaps of connections.
That's good.
Yeah, just a really good time to hang out. Nick Bradley, who hosts the My Millennial Investor podcast.
Oh, actually, yes, I need to chat to him.
Yes, remember? Yeah, you do. He came down. Well, actually, I think 2 weeks ago we had an episode that I recorded at FinCon with him on there. Okay. So the whole thing was, I'm like, I'll fly you down to New Orleans on the Sunday. FinCon doesn't start till Wednesday. Let's spend Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday morning writing the investing book.
Yeah.
We're together in the same place. Yeah, not much got wrote or written.
I was speaking to someone about that yesterday and they mentioned that you were sitting there writing a book. He's like, is he really doing that or is he holidaying?
Yeah, definitely. Well, it was just, I don't know. I'm in book mode now and then because the plane got delayed in LA, in New York. So Qantas, everyone has a new flight, Sydney to New York via Auckland. So you just literally, I got off the plane at Auckland because it was actually a tight connection. Walked through security, got rechecked, walked over. I didn't even have time to go to the lounge in Auckland. Went straight to the gate and they were boarding. Like hopped on the next plane and then went straight up to New York from Auckland. Anyway, that plane got delayed leaving New York because some amazing employee doing their job hit the engine with the air bridge. So after sitting on the platform on the tarmac for 2 hours, they're like, yeah, we've got to talk to Sydney because it's dinged and there are thresholds that it could be okay. And they're out there. I was literally sitting above it, above the engine. And I look and they've got like a torch and a measuring tape and a ruler and taking photos and sending them back to Sydney. And because I'm Mr. Nosy, I'm like, I'm just going to go for a walk up the front of the plane, walked up, talked to the hostie. Cockpit's open, they're talking on the phone to the people in Sydney and I'm just like, yeah. Yeah. And then they're like, yeah, it got delayed. And then the next day they're like, yeah, it's Tuesday night now and I had to get back for TAFE on Thursday. And then I'm like, oh, you know what, I reckon they're going to cancel this again because I just, oh, because they were going to have me in Auckland for 8 hours during the day. I'm like, no chance. Anyway, they ended up cancelling it and they're like, yeah, we're now leaving late Wednesday night. So from Dallas now and I'm just like, nah. So I went, stuff this, booked flight from New York to LA, then changed my ticket from LA to Sydney, spent a week in LA working on the book.
Nice.
So it was cool. I was actually going to extend another 3 weeks in America while I was up there because I'm like, oh, I missed one
table. The joys of being single.
And then I realized I had to pick my boat up because I got some work done on it while I was in the States and I'm like, oh, I don't really want to send a friend up. And then, yeah, I'm just like, oh, no, I'll come home. But I'll go back and – because LA is such a good time to work from.
Yeah, it's closest in America.
Well, it's just really cool because the – lunchtime, work all morning, my phone isn't ringing, no emails, no Slack messages, no text messages.
Yeah.
Get a heap of, like, writing done, 3 hours of good work.
Mm.
And then in the afternoon, Sydney comes online – talk to the team, do meetings, phone calls. Yeah. It's actually, for someone like me, it's really productive.
Yeah, no, I like it.
And then, speaking of productivity, landed on Wednesday morning in Sydney, had a 12:30 p.m. Zoom appointment for a psychological assessment with a neuropsychologist for an ADHD assessment that I forgot to put in my diary because I booked it when I was getting out of the Uber in New York and they're like, oh, we're going to do all this day. I'm like, yeah, sure, lock it in.
Oh, shit.
Just totally. And then I'm like, all right, landing in Sydney, 9 a.m. Yeah. I'm doing the dash home to Newcastle, drove home and then like straight into like this ADHD assessment, which
You're past.
But yeah, no, it's just the start of a process because I identify with a lot of the symptoms and I just want to rule it in or rule it out. And I'm not very productive and there's been a lot of impulsive things over the years which have cost me a lot of money and caused a lot of trauma.
And are they saying, what are they saying?
Well, I don't know. I did a 2.5-hour assessment, asked a heap of questions. I sent in my school report, like all my school reports. They looked at them as well. It was so funny looking through like year 7, 8, 9. There were so many little ones like, if he wasn't so distracted, if he just paid attention. And like just interesting looking back at that.
That's a lot of boys though.
Yeah, I reckon a lot of boys do have ADHD. Because remember when we were growing up, the ADD thing was like, oh, they're just a naughty boy.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, so the ones that like me that weren't bouncing off the walls, you get ignored.
Yeah.
Totally. But I'm just not anyway, so my mum, my sister filled out a thing. Yep. They looked at all my school reports, did all these little tests. I don't know. I'm booked in for February to see the psychiatrist. And hopefully, if it is confirmed, I will get some medication and hopefully deal with it.
Yeah.
And if it isn't confirmed, I'm in a lot of trouble because I don't know what the hell.
What the hell's the reason?
Loose. Maybe, just give up. Yeah.
Maybe just impulsive.
All right. See you guys.
Righto. Thanks.
Bye.